The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Joan of Art. Joan Tarika Lewis, an artist and the first woman to join the Black Panther Party, both illustrated and embodied the iconography of the movement. Visuals can be a powerful tool in political praxis. The content, design, and color of images express an artist's understanding of the world, how it is and how it can be. And when creative work is applied to community building, this vision is intensified. Joan Tarika Lewis, artist, revolutionary, and the first woman to join the Black Panther Party, deeply understood the visual possibilities as she used art as an organizing tool. I just offered Bobby Seale, co-founder of the Black Panther Party, some drawings I had for interpreting what was being said in the meetings. Lewis says of her role as an illustrator of the movement, in addition to working with Minister of Culture Emery Douglas to shape the visual identity of the group, she wrote articles for the Black Panther newspaper. We were typing with two fingers, okay? She says with a laugh. She also came into her own as a political cartoonist after she became a member of the party. Lewis vividly recalls her young adulthood through the lens of her time with the party, during which she collaborated with peers turned comrades to define the organization's political identity. She remembers how in 1967, an innocent day at San Francisco's Playland at the Beach amusement park turned into a nightmare. Lewis had been enjoying an afternoon of fun with Bonnie and June Pointer of the Pointer Sisters. After we got off the roller coaster, these two grown men had this kid, and they sucker punched this little skinny kid, Lewis says. He must have been about 13 years old. The men turned out to be policemen. The experience was, for Lewis, a rude awakening, an act of brutality that provoked her to take action. Shortly after, I joined the Black Panther Party, she states. Taking the name Tarika Matilaba Lewis, she was not initially aware that she was the party's first woman member and the first recruit, period. The distinction was brought to her attention during a conference at University of California, Berkeley, when Seale acknowledged Lewis for her groundbreaking work as a political educator and illustrator. I came in with a couple of other people late and we sat in the last row. Lewis says of the two-day event, she describes how Seale pointed her out and made an announcement. There's Matilaba, the first female recruit of the Black Panther Party, he told the audience. Lewis was raised by descendants of Black pioneers who had escaped to abolitionist Massachusetts and eventually traveled west, settling in San Francisco in 1849. Her paternal great-grandfather, Edward West Parker, managed commerce initiatives in a Virginia chapter of the Colored Conventions Movement. This foundational racial justice body was formed after enslaved, indentured, and freed blacks organized for education and political access in the event of the government's collapse and the outbreak of a civil war. That war, of course, eventually did occur. Lewis's ancestors were keenly aware of the importance of self-reliance. They had to be, if they were to survive the fluctuating fortunes of a country that was intent on disenfranchising Black people. That resilient ethos traveled with both sides of the artist family through their exodus north, then west. Lewis was born in Oakland in 1950. By then, her relatives had established multiple generations of African American community leadership, including as members of the Buffalo Soldiers and as Black physicians and homeowners. Lewis recalls growing up surrounded by Black-owned medical offices, stores, and boxing gyms, like the one where her father trained as a lightweight champion. The neighborhood was close-knit, and children like Lewis were protected by a circle of fictive kin. Oakland, especially West Oakland, was a real family community. She says of the sense of safety the city had at that time. Everyone knew each other. Everyone's doors were open. We never locked our doors. We never had bars on our windows. I had a dozen mothers up and down the street. And if a kid ever got in trouble, your mother knew about it before you got home. To some extent, the familial nature of Black Oakland served as a basis for the Black Panther Party's internal structure, especially in its earliest years when founding members and affiliates worked together to refine their political leanings. The communal framework lent itself to members' intense reliance on one another. However, this dynamic soon gave way to a gendered division of roles. The party developed an ideal, amalgamated image of the Black revolutionary woman, one who selectively elevated Black men above their gender liberation. Women were called upon to occupy a myriad of organizing spheres, simultaneously focusing on domestic, ideological, and spiritual priorities. This promotion of women as an accessory members who supported the more militant profile of men in the party made them susceptible to physical abuse, exploitation, and discrimination within the organization. On top of being revolutionaries in their own lives, women like Lewis were asked to be the strength and spirit of the party, often without due recognition of their efforts and sacrifice. In Kathleen Neal Cleaver's 1998 essay, Women, Power, and Revolution, the former communication secretary for the party suggested that the gender roles detracted from the organization's larger purpose. It seems to me that part of the genesis of the gender question, and this is only an opinion, lies in the way it deflects attention from confronting the revolutionary critique our organization made of the larger society, and turns it inward to look at what type of dynamics and social conflicts characterize the organization. She wrote, while acknowledging that discussions around gender, sexism, and women's liberation within the party could be explosive, Lewis has never been afraid of a little fire. When asked whether she had found the Black Panther Party to be misogynistic or a safe space for women to lead, create, and thrive, she responded, all of the above. As the party's influence grew, different factions took root. Initially, it was small. We all knew each other, Lewis says. Lil Bobby Hutton went to Oakland Tech High School. The first woman recruits also went to Tech. Chauvinistic outlooks became more entrenched due to an influx of new members, with shifts at the top. Seal, Huey P. Newton, and Elaine Brown all led the organization at various points, came recruits who didn't have the same sense of camaraderie that had influenced the party's early outlook. People came in droves, people we didn't know, people who had other agendas, people who had other baggage, who came into the party and also came with certain attitudes toward women, Lewis says. She left the Black Panther Party soon after. In the early 1970s, the party leadership tried to address and correct the sexist overtones that existed within the various chapters. Seal worked to better acknowledge women leaders like Lewis, carrying out an imperative that was actually reinforced by Douglas as cultural minister. In later years, Douglas publicly acknowledged the influence of women's labor in his illustrative work. "The women depicted in my artwork," Douglas told the New York Times, "are a reflection of the party. Women went to jail and were in leadership roles. Women started chapters and branches of the Black Panther Party as well. When we used to read some of the stories, you would see women in the Vietnam and Palestine struggles and in the African liberation movement. Women were an integral part of those movements. So all that played into how I express them in my own artwork." Lewis's own artistic archive, coupled with her recollections of party leadership, offers an important counter-narrative to the often male-dominated imagery of Black power. Her legacy extends beyond the illustrations, however, as her artistic expression in various mediums challenges colonial, white supremacist, and capitalistic structures. Long after her official involvement in the party, Lewis used her art to reframe intersectional hegemonies that impacted the lives of Black and oppressed people, doing murals in her native California. "I work with a lot of ethnic communities and I do a lot of graphic designs," she says. "I did a t-shirt for Black Asian Unity that's still circulating in San Francisco and the Bay Area." Additionally, for the next 2 years, she will exhibit paintings at San Francisco's Chinese Historical Society of America Museum, supporting the efforts to promote a strong alliance between the Asian and Black communities. More recently, Lewis has also built a career as a music educator. She teaches beginners violin in Oakland, but through all of her creative pursuits, the visual possibilities of art will always have a special place in her heart. "It's an amazing tool of expression," she says. "I use it now to show where we've been and where to go." The next article is titled, "R&B is Not Dead." Coco Jones, Mooney Long, Cash Page, three dynamic women in the music industry who are revitalizing the new age. Over 30 years ago, Mary J. Blige was crowned the Queen of Hip Hop Soul, the title bestowed on her by record executive Andre Harrell, was the byproduct of the positive reception to her studio album, What's the 411. At the time of the album's release, Entertainment Weekly described it as one of the most accomplished fusions of soul values and hip-hop to date. Executive produced by Sean Puffy Combs, the album incorporated elements of hip-hop's beats and narrative-driven lyricism. The meshing of genres extended beyond sound and into fashion. Combs hired Missa Hylton, now a style icon, to curate and produce looks to accentuate Blige's Fly Girl personality and attitude. Through her creative partnerships with Combs and Houlton, Blige introduced not only a new sound to R&B, but a new type of singer. In the late 1990s and early 2000s, R&B was at the top of music charts. The new millennium expanded opportunities for musicians to connect with their fans online through early social media networking sites and fan pages. However, as the internet began to connect listeners to genres outside of their locale, preferences in the mid to late 2000s started to orient toward European electronic music and dance pop. This shift resulted in the prioritization of electro pop and dance pop over R&B, which led to the category's dismissal from the mainstream. R&B's transition to the underground afforded an opportunity for the genre to reinvent itself. Between 2011 to 2012, Frank Ocean and The Weeknd released their debut mixtapes online. The musical projects Nostalgia, Ultra, and House of Balloons ushered R&B into the 2010s. Instead of using gospel as a leading influence, this type of R&B pulled together elements of alternative, indie, and rock. Although the projects could be considered R&B, they reflected the sound of a black kid who came of age on the internet. For that generation, labeling, whether in terms of sexual orientation and gender expression, or placing their music in one specific group, felt like a confine instead of an umbrella under which to build community. As with Blige, Ocean and The Weeknd pushed R&B into another phase of evolution. Their efforts created a new entry point for singers to establish and develop themselves without the influence of the radio and music industry. The hit is you going in a closet, in the studio, in your room, going wherever to make a song that you love and a song that you personally like to listen to, says Cash Page. Love Songs, Page's breakout single, which went viral on TikTok in 2019, then amassed millions of streams on SoundCloud and Spotify, is a testament to her word. Before she signed to Def Jam, Page was an independent artist uploading original R&B songs to SoundCloud. Love Songs was one of them. Since then, the 22-year-old has collaborated with Alicia Keys, 6 Lat, Don Toliver, Isaiah Rashad, Moneybagg Yo, Little TJ, Tanisha, and Travis Scott. These experiences have contributed to the maturation of her sound on Soundtrack to My Life, the singer's sophomore album. She excitingly says of the album, "It's R&B, but it takes you on a journey. It goes from R&B to turn up Kari type, and then goes right back down to it." From those unfamiliar with Paige's stage presence, she rages with the rock star spirit of Lenny Kravitz, but has the soft voice of an angel. As an adolescent, she was drawn to alternative and rock music, particularly the way they made her feel. At her performances, Paige serves as a conductor. Through her voice, she lulls the audience into the intimate feelings of her songs, followed by a quick transition into her stage-diving personality. For Paige, whether the sensation arises from jumping into a mosh pit or selecting beats in a recording session, it has put her in a place where people are taking notes. She lists Ciara's Goodies, and The Weeknd's Trilogy as examples of contemporary R&B albums that make you feel, arguing R&B is finding more. R&B is recreating the genre. It's a feeling. It's rhythm. Whatever you want to do, it's getting your groove. Everybody just create their own world and allow everybody to be a part of it. The ability to create one feeling through music is symbolic of R&B's relationship with storytelling. For a period of time, R&B was one of the few safe spaces where Black women could comfortably disclose their trials and tribulations as well as their breakthroughs. In R&B, singers became the conduit for channeling personal journeys and establishing a relationship between listeners and the artist. Coco Jones found in R&B a medium to tell her own stories in comparison to the character she plays on the silver screen. Storytelling with my music is different than on screen, because on screen is not about me at all. It's really about making the character come to life. And so I will sometimes create backstories that are not mine. They are what I would feel would fit the character so that I can present a very authentic version of this character, she says. But with my music, it's all about me. It's all about how I feel that day. What didn't I tell you? Her debut EP is the compilation of untold stories from a time when Jones didn't know how to be herself. In my past, there were so many scripts and so many prompts and so many strategic routes that me being authentic with myself through music has helped me to learn more about myself. For the majority of Jones's life, she has experienced pressure to be someone else in order to adhere to what Hollywood considers a successful Black woman. Now she has decided to center herself in her own stories in television and music. There are three basic questions in storytelling. Who writes the stories? Who benefits from the story? Who is missing from the stories? In Mooney Long's case, she is the author and beneficiary. For over a decade, Long penned award-winning songs for pop's biggest stars and went by a different name, but they were not the stories she wanted to tell. We definitely went through a period of too cool. You know what I'm saying? I'm too cool for that. I'm too cool to love, she reflects. Everybody was trying to rap sing at a certain point, and that's okay. No judgment, because I was liking a lot of that stuff too. But I think it's time to move on, she adds. Long aspired to make songs that evoke emotions, like Method Man and Blige's You're All I Need. She mentions artists of the era like Combs, known back then as Puff Daddy, and Faith Evans, who understood the power of a simple song that brought great impact because it had feeling. I think people, we are lacking compassion these days. Everybody's so desensitized, and I think deep down we want to be loved, we want to feel, Long says, and I think as long as I continue to give them that and help people escape from the darkness of reality, the more love that we are able to inject on the other side. Right now, as an artist, I think this is a great opportunity for R&B to kind of sneak in there and just take over. Her breakthrough single, Hers and Hers, provided the perfect opening for couples to showcase their affectionate love after an intense period of global lockdown due to COVID. The song also served as an introduction to Long, the storyteller she always wanted to be. Long makes the music that she wants to hear instead of being encouraged to write music that is popular. The success of Hers and Hers helped Long negotiate a partnership with Def Jam, allowing her to focus on the creation of music instead of serving as her own fashion stylist, hairstylist, makeup artist, and more. She describes this state as a matter of me being consistent with the same integrity of music, the same level of music, where people love it. Every time I put something out, it's going to have that same integrity and the same impact. I can only pray and hope that I can do that over and over. That's all I'm focused on. All this to say, R&B is alive and well. It's just not the same R&B your parents and grandparents grew up with. Inherently, music is omnipresent and ever-changing, which means the singers who create and produce songs change alongside it. The new generation is not like the one before, but they should be welcomed as having the same relevance and earning the same respect afforded to Blige in 1992. The next article is titled, Well Suited. Power suiting is the decades-old concept of using tailoring to enhance the film form, creating an armor of sleekness, ferocity, and power. Iconic suit warriors from Joan Clayton to Grace Jones paved the way. But here's how to incorporate suiting into any wardrobe, aesthetic, vibe, and occasion today. The allure of suiting and tailoring is that it can be worn in a myriad of ways. In a more expensive oversized fit, pair it with a sequined blouse or a bib tuxedo shirt, or reimagine it as a crop top paired with a black maxi skirt. There is no definitive way that suiting needs to be styled, so feel free to play with proportion and scale. Experiment with a cropped jacket and high-waisted trousers, or pair a cardigan with hot pants. There's nothing more classically stylish than a navy pinstripe. With origins in banking, it's a power combo that signals you mean business. Wear it as a full suit or try a deconstructed iteration of the look. The next article is titled, Bringing Communities of Support to Students. At Communities in Schools, we are working to ensure students have everything they need. We will be there for them all day, every day, providing emotional support and resources like school supplies, meals, and access to technology and learning materials. Hashtag all in for kids. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.